Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Race and Lanes with your hosts Rico Muhammad and Chuck Snow.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Race and Lanes podcast. I'm your host Rico Muhammad, and I'll be joined shortly by my co-host, Mr. Chuck Snow, and our special guest this evening. It's always a blast when Hank comes on. Hank will be joining us this evening. We're going to be kind of dabbling back in, crossing back over into the abyss of, well, I ain't going to call it the abyss. I don't want to give it a bad connotation, but we're going to be discussing factoring. Factoring can be, you know, if used properly, it can be an asset to your business. Starting out, a lot of people have to use factoring to get started. But we're gonna kind of talk about the good, the bad, and the ugly. And if you got questions pertaining to factoring, by all means, press the number one and get involved. We'd love to hear what you have to say, or if you got a question about factoring, by all means, press number one, and we'll try our best to get you a really good answer to your question. Without any further ado, jumping over into this week's information coming from DAT Trend Lines report. Let's see here. We have diesel fuel price that has remained unchanged again, showing a national average diesel price at $2.39 per gallon nationwide. Spot market rates for vans, reefers, and flatbeds continued their upward momentum last week as we entered into what typically is peak months for trucks for trucking. Volumes continue to climb as much as the country relaxes the measures put in place to contain the coronavirus outbreak. So pretty much America is opening back up, and we're starting to see somewhat of some things kind of returning back to a little bit of normalcy. Take a little bit of a deeper dive and check, see how these rates were performing over the different type of segments. And starting out with dry vans up in the northeastern portion of the United States, we're showing an average outbound spot market rate for dry vans at $1.38 per mile on average coming out of the Northeast. Dropping down into the mid-Atlantic and southeastern states, we're showing an average outbound spot market rate of $1.64. Moving along, going up into the Midwest, we're showing outbound spot market rates for dry vans at $1.74. Moving down to the south central region of the United States, we're showing outbound spot market rates at $1.58 per mile on average. Moving over into wrapping up out of the West Coast, we're showing average outbound spot market rates for the West Coast dry vans at $1.78 per mile. Moving along, jumping over into the flatbed segment of the report, starting out in the northeastern portion of the United States, we're showing outbound spot market rates for flatbeds at $1.84. Moving down into the mid-Atlantic, we're showing outbound spot market rates at $2.03. Jumping up into the Midwest, we're showing outbound rates at $2.04. Down in the south central region of the United States, $1.93 on the outbound for flatbeds. And wrapping up, coming out of the West Coast, outbound spot market rates for flatbeds at $1.82. Jumping over into the final segment, wrapping up with reefer temperature controlled, we're showing outbound spot market rates out of the Northeast at $1.55. Moving down to the mid-Atlantic and southeastern states, we're showing outbound spot market rates at $1.89. Coming out of the Midwest, we're showing outbound spot market rates at $1.99. Coming out of the south central region, we're showing outbound spot market rates at $1.94. and wrapping up coming out of the West Coast. We're showing outbound spot market rates at 236. And with that being said, let me go grab my co-host, Mr. Chuck Snow. Chuck, how are you this evening?
We're doing well. How are you doing there, Rico?
I'm doing pretty good. How are things going for you guys up north of the border there?
Well, you know, there's parts of the economy that have been dismantled. Things are, you know, we don't have the outbound freight leaving Canada that we did at one time, even with our dollar in the toilet. We're, you know, with this usually with the difference in dollar, the Americans are up here buying anything they can lay their hands on. Unfortunately, there's not a lot for them to buy because it's just so expensive to operate here. So there is a shortage of outbound freight out of Canada, which makes it very difficult for some of the truckers to get into the U.S. to pick up the loads coming back. So it's an issue. We're working through it. We always do. And we've been doing this so long that we have been able to, you know, we've been able to pick up an awful lot of business in 41 years. So it puts us in a pretty good position. But I really can't complain overall that we've, you know, there's certain parts of our business that are a little bit slower than normal. But overall, because we're so embraced in the food industry, different segments, both dry and fresh and frozen as well, we've been able to weather the storm fairly well. And we didn't have a huge amount of debt, which also didn't have any debt, which really made a huge difference. Compared to some other companies out there, both asset-based and non-asset-based, it makes a big difference. And that brings us into the conversation tonight. We're waiting for our special guest, Hank Seaton, to join us, who's one of the top transportation lawyers in your country. We certainly use him all the time, the traffic's for anything that comes up. And Hank knows an awful lot about factoring, but one of my concerns, and I've been, you know, having been in this business as long as I have, I've watched the factoring industry just really, really evolve. And I was in it at one point for a very short period of time, about 20 years ago. And at that time, there was one major factor in this whole continent. And I don't mind saying their name online. It was Riviera. And they had the market pretty much to themselves. And it was such a great business as far as a business model because you were getting 5%. So when you gave them an invoice for $1,000, really you're supposed to get $950 back, which is 5%. But how it really works with factoring is they don't give you all the money at one time. They have a holdback, and they usually hold back about 25% of what they're supposed to give you in case something happens. And I want Hank to come on because there's a lot of things going on in the factoring industry right now that you have some of the smaller factors that are, they're obviously they're running out of money. And I'm hearing this all over. They're having a tough time. And then you have some of the larger factors. Go ahead, Rico.
No, that's definitely news to me as far as the factors running out of money. I just reached out. I just reached out. I got Hank on. I got him. Give him a few minutes to get some things together, and we'll bring him on here in just a few minutes.
Wonderful. And then you have some. And this is something I was talking to Hank the other day. There's a very large factoring company in the United States that is collecting, and you've got to get this, they're collecting money from the shippers and the brokers, and they're not applying it to the customers, their customers who are their truckers in our instance, or the people I know, they're not applying it to the account right away. So that means that the trucker is paying extra.
Extra interest.
Exactly. And, you know, there's been a lot of complaints about one in particular, who's, and I'm not going to mention names because I don't want to get sued. But this is like, this is unheard of. Now, you can use COVID-19 as an excuse, but, you know, this is not a good situation because I know what it costs to run trucks. There's not a fortune in it. By the time you pay everybody, you know, those guys in Washington were running around D.C. complaining about brokers. Well, I'm not saying there weren't some unscrupulous brokers, Rico, but it's all over the place. It's what some of these guys pay to the brokers, and then they pay to the factor. And by the time it comes to them, there's no money left. And
exactly.
That's part of the issue. That's a big part of the issue. And one of the things that I don't like about factoring, besides for the costs, but when I got into trucking, you had to have some money. And you couldn't expand unless you had cash, as my late father-in-law used to call it, CIF, cash in fist. Okay? You couldn't go and buy a truck unless you had, you know, a brand new truck. You need $10,000 down or whatever it was, or $5,000 down. You needed money down for your insurance. You had to have money. And you couldn't expand your business until you had that money in your fist so you could afford to expand. What factoring has done, although it's been a real boon to the trucking industry and it's allowed a lot of people to expand, it's allowed them to expand and go out too far without the security and of their own money. Does that make sense? You're going out on this long, long diving board with no support, and all of a sudden, you know, you're way out there and you're in over your head. And that's what's happened here. So you've got, and that's put the smaller trucking company in a horrible position. And I'm not blaming I'm not sitting here blaming the factors. It's just a fact, pardon the pun, that it's given the smaller trucker way too much ability to get in deeper than he or she should have. Because you should expand. Trust me, and I know this very well. When you grow your business and you expand, you have to do it slowly. It's really good to say, you know what? We've got two trucks and we're going to have 20 by next year. Well, you better have the back room to handle that 20 truck fleet. And if you don't, you're going to get in trouble. And I've seen it so many times. And you normally can't get that sort of financing unless you're selling your accounts receivables. But the problem is, when you're selling your accounts receivables, it is no different than when the guy working in the factory up the road sells his paycheck for next week to the loan that loan cashing service. And
right,
that's an advance.
Cash.
Exactly. It is so difficult for those businesses to ever catch up. You've got to be able to somewhere have a couple of really good whirlwind months to start catching up. Now, there are some times when factoring makes so much sense. When you have a customer that takes, let's say they take 45 or 60 days to pay, and you really need that business, and that business pays really, really well, well, then you can afford it, you know, and you can afford to pay that. But when you're taking freight off of a load board or what I call cheap commoditized freight, such as lumber and things of that nature, they can't afford to pay very much because stuff's not worth a whole lot. And if you start factoring that freight, and I'm talking about the freight you were talking about when you did the DAT report, the freight that's $1.38 a mile coming out of the east, you're running that well under your cost. and you start paying the actual cost to sell that receivable, and you're underwater. And that's where all of these issues are. And I really don't believe that a lot of people in business know the true cost of factoring, because it's not, you think it's 2% off of the invoice or 5%. And we'll just use 5 because it's a nice, easy number. And there's not a lot of people paying 5% anymore. But it's a nice, easy number to work with. So if you're paying that 5% and you move that load every week for that customer, you're paying a lot of interest. You know, if that customer pays in 30 days, that's costing you pretty close to 60%, because I look at it 5% a month times 12 months is 60. And that's the true cost. You can't pay that sort of, if you went and you borrowed that same $1,000 from the bank, the interest would be $20 or $30. That's all it would be.
Well, I don't.
Instead of this,
I don't want to keep. I don't want to keep Hank waiting.
Neither do I.
Chuck, I'm gonna bring him on board for him to join the discussion. And at the same time, I'm getting ready to try to attempt to, while I'm bringing Hank on board. I don't know if how this is going to work, but I'm going to try to go live on our Instagram and see if we can maybe be able to get some viewers on our Instagram to maybe chime in and join us.
Okay.
So without any further ado, let's welcome Hank. Hank, good evening. How are you?
I'm fine. I was just talking in our chat room about the fact when Chuck told me that this would be a topic tonight, I was more than anxious to participate. And, you know, my initial position is that that factors provide a necessary financial opportunity for people that are undercapitalized. I think if it's systemic among new small carriers that they've got to pledge their house to get a truck, they've got to do all kinds of things. It's a risky business. Part of the problem is the large banks want to lend to deep pockets, and that's why you see so much churn in the industry, particularly with Wall Street money coming in. Chuck's analysis is right in terms of the cost of money to a small carrier who factors. It was my understanding from factoring clients that it had become a whole lot more competitive recently than it used to be.
God, yeah.
Their cost of money has dropped, and it can be a horse market, but it's kind of like buying insurance. The lowest rate is not necessarily the best deal. As I was explaining to Chuck, and it's in the book Rules of the Road, there's a section on the kinds of contract provisions that are in a lot of factoring agreements, and they are not fit to sign. One of the tricks is that you've got to guarantee them a certain level of cash flow, so that you've got to guarantee you'll factor $15,000 a month or whatever with them. And then an exclusive factoring agreement that says you've got to give them your accounts receivable for all accounts. Now, when Chuck was talking about the fact that, well, gee, you need to be able to factor that 60-day account because your bills are due in 15 and nobody made you a bank. He's true, but when you get in one of these agreements, if you've got a good account that pays you on 30 days, question becomes, what are you paying the factor for? The answer to that can be fairly simple. Number one, large factors know better than you will ever know who's a potential bad debtor. They will set your credit limits. They'll keep you from stepping in into your own mess in terms of being named as an unsecured creditor. Most of the factoring finance is what they call recourse financing, which means they didn't buy that account forever. If you were $20,000 through a factor with Neiman Marcus, expect to see that come back and deducted from future revenue. They're just giving you the loan on the money. They're not taking the debt. So
you're renting the money, right, Hank?
You're renting the money. But one of the key things is if you have got good business with a retailer that is on Peck's Bad Boy list, you need to be looking not for a factor, but for somebody who buys that account and takes the risk. And part of the issue that you really need to think long and hard about is what should you add to the line haul to cover your factoring cost? If you're factoring and one of my favorite beverage companies wants 60-day float, what's the cost of money to you? You know, you ought to be saying to the guy who wants 60 or 90 day, first of all, you need to be blue chip. And second of all, I need to add 2%, 3%, 4% to the price tag. That's one of the reason that, you know, all these people are offering term, you know, they're offering advance pay, the C.H. Robinson and the big brokers. They're just making money acting like a bank when they do it. So realize that isn't it frustrating, guys, to see that you've got a Wall Street high cap industry and they want you to carry their float when they've got the money and you don't?
How unfair!
I mean, you know,
that?
Where's the rationale for that? The old regulations for trucking were, and they're still there, that unless you make a side agreement, it's cash and carry, you're supposed to be paid in 15 days. If you're an owner-operator, you're supposed to be paid in 15 days. But if you're a small carrier signing a big broker contract, they want 60, you know, 45 days. And guess what? They're using your money.
Yeah.
So, you know, you've got to be realistic about it. But I don't want to anybody come back and say, well, Hank really bashed factors, because I know some that generally take the attitude that if the small carrier isn't a success story, they aren't. And they provide fuel discounts, and they help with insurance. And when you get to one of these mean and nasty brokers that wants to offset a cargo claim rather than just turn around and say, well, sorry, Charlie, that cargo claim means I've got to hit your reserve for $20,000. They've already been to that big factor and said, look, buddy, you start doing this, we're going to have to lower your reserve with all of our customers and tell them why.
We've got a caller with a question, guys. Calling to call in from the 716 area code. We're not screening calls tonight, but you're up live with Rico, Hank, and Chuck. If you got a question about factoring or anything transportation law related, go ahead and have at it. What's your name and where are you calling from? Calling from the 716 area code.
Hello. Can you hear me now?
Hello.
Yes.
Perfectly.
Yeah.
Yes, how are you doing? I was just listening to you. Sorry about my noise here. I was just listening to hear what you have for the podcast today. So I'm just glad I joined. I just want to know how you guys are doing it in the factoring area. I'm just a very small, just one truck, and I'm trying to hear what you guys have to say about factoring. So that's why I'm on here.
Okay, are you factoring right now? Do you have a factoring service that you utilize, or what? How are you set up with your operation?
Well, actually, I have Revolution as my factoring. So just with one truck, like I said, I'm running. So I do factor when I do have those loads, yes.
Okay. Can I just ask you a question? Are you selling all your accounts receivables or just some?
All the receivables, yes.
All? And
a few of these will give you a few, maybe one or two that I have that will do pay out, but most of them are going to be done by my factoring.
Now, is that the rule? Do you have to guarantee your factor a certain amount of volume every month?
Yes, my volume is really, really small. Like I spoke to someone, Jeff, this afternoon. I'm just one guy on the track, so I don't have that big a volume. So it's not much. It's not much to go, anyways.
Well,
remember this.
Yes.
To confirm the factoring agreement, the factor gets the right to file what's called a UCC-1. And that gives the factor, makes him a secured creditor and makes him first in line if you go bankrupt. So that is giving away a lot of collateralization on your behalf. So if you wanted to go out and buy a new truck, you'd be able to probably buy a new truck from a lending institution because they keep the interest in the truck. But if you needed to go out and borrow money for insurance or anything else, there's a good chance that whoever would lend you that money would say, wait, your collateral is jeopardized by the UCC-1. So, you know, what happens is that's an important concession that's made to the factor. And if you decide that you want to put on three trucks or you want to get away from the factor or you've got a factor who'll give you a better deal, they'll have to buy back your UCC-1, or chances are the factor will want to keep it until you get through with some termination period or all of your accounts receivable are paid. So it hurts your liquidity and it hurts your borrowing capacity. That's not to say don't do it. You just need to understand that they're first in line if something happens to you and you don't have a whole lot of other assets that you can pledge to borrow money to do anything else.
That's true. So one thing that I always want to try to, when we have these shows, and we always talk about the pitfalls and everything, and I'm glad that we're trying to educate people about the different things when it comes to factoring, but we always want to try to leave everybody with solutions. And one thing that we've talked about that we want to start trying to develop more and helping people with is developing your business credit. Understand that sometimes, even if you got to start out with your personal, if you have to start out with your personal credit, if you got a credit card, in many cases, if you got a credit card, using your credit card as a factor, you know, if you want to cash advance against that, sometimes it's a lot better interest rate than dealing with a factoring company. Now, you know, that may be a small bridge to get you where you're going to while you're trying to develop that business credit. But there are ways and methods that you can start to use to develop your business credit to get to a point to where you can be able to float yourself to a point to get away to kind of be more self-sufficient. I don't think that a lot of times, like we've talked about, people don't really understand how the interest is really calculated when you're dealing with a factoring company. They hear, oh, it's only 5%, but they don't understand that's only 5% for those 30 days, so that actually if you compound that 5% interest rate can actually turn
multiply times 12 and see what you got. Yeah.
Right.
And there's nobody, you know what? Yeah, you're right. There's nobody in the trucking business that makes 60% a year. It's impossible. So
even though credit card interest rates, I don't want people to misunderstand, even though a credit card interest rate may be, you know, credit card is not cheap, it may be 22% on some credit cards, but some people may have a little bit of better interest rate on credit card, but that is an APR, which is an annual percentage rate for the year, whereas the factoring company is a 30, it's a daily calculated percentage point. And people it seems so minute, but you're dying a death on a thousand cuts when you're dealing with those things, and you don't really understand how much you're bleeding out.
Exactly.
When you look at cost benefit analysis, let's in fairness to the factors figure out what they're doing to help you. First of all, they have got credit information on how shippers and brokers pay that you don't. Even though they say that they've got recourse The responsible ones I know say they have very little come back to them on recourse because the carrier or the because the broker or the shipper can't pay. They do have problems with the offsets. You got to realize it's a spiral of death. If the factor has advanced you money, there's a cargo claim, and the broker takes it out of your accounts receivable, well, now your factor has to recoup that money. First of all, he's got a little pot of your money that he's keeping over there called a reserve. He dings that, and then if there isn't any money, other money, he's got you. You're bankrupt. You're gone. You've spent that money. So that's the hoary side of it. He is setting up an accounts receivable. He is doing your billing. There may be some other benefits over on the ledger side. I think that you probably find that the interest rates, from what I hear, are more down to, 1% of money a month and half over that, or something far less than 5%. I don't know for sure.
Well,
I hear it's competitive. But let's assume that it is 5% on every freight bill. You know that in truckload business, people would be very happy to have a 95 operating ratio. So,
right.
You know, at 5%, you're giving up all your profit just to finance Anheuser-Busch. So, I mean,
right.
You know, at that point, we work on a profit margin in trucking that's very, very skinny, and you've got to look at the cost of
right.
money to do that analysis.
And I don't think that I don't think that people are actually looking at when you know, like, we're talking about there's this big hoopla and uproar about brokers are getting this much money, brokers are robbing us blind. Okay, I agree that when you're dealing with a broker, no, you're not maximizing profitability. However, if you're dealing with a broker and if you are getting a fair rate from that broker, but you realize that you are getting a smaller piece of the pie, and then you set yourself up with some of these factoring companies. And then you set yourself up to even take an even smaller piece of the pie by dealing with the factoring company. So I think that, you know, the running a business, and this is the thing that I always talk about on our show, is that the small guy has to become a little bit more savvy in the business, in the operation of the business, not just because you got a passion and that you enjoy, you love driving a truck. Okay, that's great, but, you know, we're not charities out here. You are in this for profit. You're in this to support yourself and your family, and your profits are in the minutest of detail that you may be overlooking. And those and like you were just saying, Hank, that 5% that you're signing up to give away at the factoring table, that's 5% if it pays in those 30 days. He was making a point that some factoring companies are holding monies and not attributing it to the account until after those 30 days, thereby increasing their profitability on the amount of interest that they can charge on that spread. And this is where, you know, you have no way, honestly, you have no way of verifying when the factor actually received the check. So, I mean,
when Chuck and I were talking about it, obviously, from the factor's point of view, the question is, does he credit your account when the shipper's check clears his account? I mean, you know, you got this whole idea about the midnight deadline for clearing the account.
Right.
The fact that he gets a check in the mail from Little Brothers Truck Brokers doesn't mean he immediately credits against you. Somebody doesn't deposit that check inadvertently tonight, and it lags over a weekend, it may go over the 30 days, and you may randomly end up being dinged. But if it could be shown that this was not just the two legal terms, one is misfeasance and the other is malfeasance. Misfeasance means a mistake. Malfeasance means some intentional misdeed. If there are factors who are intentionally sitting on money without crediting it, that's one hell of a class action. I mean, that is just dirty pool.
Right. But the other thing too is that, like I was saying, is you know, by going up, some factors operate on a sliding scale, meaning that once you go over that 30 days, and then instead of that that 5% or whatever, it may bump up to now another 2 percentage points or another 1.5 percentage points. You know,
some of those things are written like a midnight deadline, and it's not on average pay.
Right.
It's on a pay bill by pay bill.
Right.
So, you know, if you've got some shipper who pays 30 days after invoice, and you don't get the invoice in until to the factor until Monday, he doesn't get it forwarded until Friday to the shipper, and that's when the shipper's 30 days starts to run. Everything's going to go over to the second month, because you're going to eat the lag time from the time the shipment is delivered until it goes through the factor and gets in the hands of the consignee. But your factor's clock is going to start the day he funds you, which may very well be the day he gets your invoice, not the day the shipper does. So as you can see, the way it's systemically set up, unless you got some shippers who pay early, if they're all on 30 days, you can see how you could seemingly constantly being paid not the 30-day rate but the 60-day rate. So,
sure.
You know, all that adds up.
And that's why you cannot build a trucking business, especially today, using factored money. You're better off, as Rico pointed out, you're better off to use on a lot of it, use a credit card. It's at least it gives you, it's not cheap. And I've seen some factoring companies, they're down to as cheap as 1.82%, somewhere in there, for an invoice. So it looks like it's a good deal. And I think for some accounts where you've got some meat on the bone, you might very well bet it may be really good, but you certainly can't afford to do it with all your accounts, and you'd be better off. You'd have a lot more freedom as an independent business owner to just have the luxury of a credit card or a couple of credit cards, even if you were paying 20 or 22%, at least you could pay off those credit cards when some cash came in and you weren't tied to anybody. And those customers, you would even give you the opportunity to go to some of your larger customers or your brokers and say, listen, I'll tell you what, I'll give you 2% for 10 days or whatever the deal is, and allow you to get that extra cash. I know there's been times in my life where I've made deals with customers and said, I'll give you a discount. I need some money. And we worked it out. And I gave them a discount, and they paid their bill right away. And we were able to bring in money that we needed. You know,
as a little guy, you don't have any real bargaining. You know, the whole question is, every time I talk about fairness, people say, "Well, the market dictates." But you know, when you look at it, if all things were equal and people took the proper ethical view and looked at it from your side of the table, you could say, look, Charlie, in the business I'm in, trucking, the time value of money is far more costly to me than it is to you. You want 60 days. You need to know that for me to quote you a long-term rate, you're going to have to pay my interest rate,
I'll
not yours.
Right.
I mean, you know, if my standard, and this is one thing, guys, that I'm starting to preach, but I'm not sure I got any listeners. You start off by saying, all right, look, forget the spot market of it. I need to make my money. I got to come out with a round trip. Here's all my cost allocation, and you say, here's the standard rate I can afford to come back from Nashville to Atlanta with, and then you get some dude that's got some freight, and you say, look, my publish rate from Atlanta back is $450. That's what I give when my service terms apply. That's 30 day pay. That's with my accessorial charges. Now, if you want a long term rate, my cheapest and best rate is $5 a pound, 2 day delivery, 2 hours free time. But look, if we're going to, I got to get my pencil real sharp. If you need more than that in your contract, I'll be happy to try to accommodate you, but it's got a cost.
Of course.
It's kind of like saying, you know, if you go in and buy a Big Mac, that's cool. It costs X, but now if you want a shake with it and you want a Coke, you're going to have to pay a little more. I mean, that's really a cost-based pricing. But what the market says is, look, it's just a whore's market. If you don't take it, somebody else will. Goodbye. Well, as Rico has consistently preached, and I think he's right, if that's the kind of marketplace you're in, then you have a hard time growing or sustaining a business.
Well, yeah, that's exactly why we're telling people, pick a lane, pick a commodity, pick specialize in something, because you can't afford to be a generalist today.
It's called a niche market.
Right.
You've got to be able to find something that is a niche that you can do consistently better than anybody else,
right,
or at least the preferred vendor.
You know, I had a phone call tonight. We have an ongoing ad in the in one of the publications for owner operators, and I happened to grab a phone call tonight from somebody, and he was a small carrier, and he said, "Listen, I know you're looking for owner operators, but Hank refers to as a one truck Charlie, and I have my own authority." I said, "Well, we use guys like you all the time, but not, you know, not for this. We're actually looking for some trucks for our fleet." And so I was having a chat with him. I said, "Well, where do you go as a one truck show?" And he said, "Oh, I go all over 48 states." And I explained to him, just like we tell people on this show, that's your biggest problem here is, you know, I can give you the name of the person to contact to get set up with us, but when you tell him you go all over the place, you're really no good to him. But if you said, "Listen, I service Toronto to Atlanta or Toronto to Cleveland or Toronto to New York City," mm-hmm. Now my people have a reason to call you, because we'll make a list. You know, we know that if you have a load from Toronto to New York City, call this guy. For Atlanta, call this guy. So the brokers, and I don't think our brokerage is any different than any others, we all have our go-to people. And as we've said on this show 100 times, very few good loads end up on the load board, because every one of us has our go-to guys. So that's why it's so important for these smaller carriers to specialize in something, even a commodity. You know, I know a lot of small carriers that specialize in steel or grain or something, and they're specialists. You know, there's been a whole bunch, especially in the area we're in, really small carriers that haul cars on open decks because there's a huge Mannheim car auction. So you've got dozens of small auto carriers, you know, independent guys that have one or two trucks and they just haul cars. But the dealers know these people, so they deal with them direct. You know, that's how you build a business. But paying, I'm sure these people don't pay 36 or 48% a year for their financing, because they have their direct customer, because they're a specialized carrier. And that's what we need to teach our listeners, is the actual cost. And maybe some of them are starting to get the numbers.
And at the end of the day, the number one thing, like you said, is, you know,
we got to understand our cost of operation, get that thing down. Once we got that down, then we have a basis what we can do. Now you got a basis of which you can operate. But too many times, I think we just gloss over, like I said, you know, the nostalgia and we love the open road of getting out here and just doing, you know, doing what we enjoy, doing what you love. But at the end of the day, to me, that's just not very satisfying, not very gratifying to be out here busting your hump and not getting not getting your fair share, or getting, I don't want to make it seem like it's an entitlement, because at the same time, you know, it's business, and business is warfare. You know, you got to be, it's cutthroat. So, and only the strong, and only the strong survive. And sometimes, you know, not to sound cruel, but, you know, I think that we're definitely heading into a time where the herd is getting ready to get caught. And you don't want to be, you don't want to be in that number. You don't want to be on that side of the equation. And so what we're talking about and what we're trying to tell people is to give them all of the things that they can try to put in their toolbox to keep them from being, keep them from being one of the ones going into the slaughter, the bloodbath that's coming. Because if you thought that we went through a bloodbath before, I think that, later on this, in a couple of months, we really, as they say, the shit's gonna start stinking.
What? You could be right. What do you think, Hank?
I don't think trucking in 5 years is going to look anything like it has now. And I've been ruminating over the past 40 years of regulation, and I think a small man had a better chance 40 years ago than he does now. I think deregulation has become a nest of the strong against the small and the weak. And I think it's amazing that we got 600,000 small carriers out here trying to make money. I think it's a travesty that on the independent contractor side, the owner operator side, we've got this truth in leasing that says the owner operator gets paid in 15 days, whatever the deductions are. They have to be specified in writing. If somebody messes him up, he's got a federal statute that lets him take it to court. It's called truth in leasing. It's the same thing that you have with truth in lending. There are rules there that protect small people. But when you get over into trucking, we used to have rules. We had the Carmack Amendment. As a carrier, you got to publish your own rules. Shipper had to pay you in 15 days. Broker had to keep records to show what your margin was and make it available. The broker had to give you a constructive trust. There's a whole set of regulations out here that's really the truth in brokering regulations, and they're simple 11 or 12 paragraphs. And they're great prohibitions. If you don't have a broker's bond and a broker's license, you got a straight shot at the owner of the company in federal court. All that stuff is wonderful, but the statute says that they can all be waived in a contract. So every contract you get waives the rights and remedies that a small carrier would have against the large broker. But if you are an owner-operator, you've got those kinds of rights and remedies. And that's part of what I think is in OIDA's crawl, when they come in and say the regulations say any party to a broker transaction should be able to see what the shipper was billed and what the carrier was paid.
Right.
Now, the brokers are going to fight that like crazy because they require that to be waived in every contract. They say, well, you know, what we make as a markup is secret. We want to keep it that way. And the law allows us to jam that down the small carrier. OIDA's position has got some strength. You know, if you're in the real estate business, you know you're going to get a 6% margin. But in most other business where you have got either an agent or a broker, they work on a commission, and the commission is fairly normal practice and it's set. But the way the laws work between brokers and carriers, and the way law of supply and demand works, you don't have any of the broker protection because it's all waived. You don't get a guarantee that your freight charges are going to be paid, because the idea of people handling cargo claims and adjusting them is taken out by an offset. The money's just taken out of your receivables, and if you factor the receivables, the factor's got a hole in his pocket, and he's got a high hold on your thigh, and you're out of business. So all of the rules that we put in place to protect the small carriers get waived in these stinking contracts.
I got something here that I want to read before we get out of here, because we got about 10 minutes left in the show, and I just came across this as a post on Facebook. And check this out. This person said, just got off the phone with, I'm not going to name the broker, but they're out of Cincinnati. They're docking my pay $141 because the shipper shorted the load by one box of chicken, and there was one box that was crushed. What the hell? The rep in claims is telling me that it is my responsibility to count all of the boxes that are loaded onto the truck to ensure that all of the freight is there during COVID and even not during COVID. Who in the world is going to count 50 boxes on each pallet to ensure that the shipper loaded all of the product? It is a real shame how they are able to do this. What is the solution here? I know brokers have to protect themselves. They are literally asking me nearly impossible and expect us to take responsibility for it. I know that people steal stuff, and that's not right, but everyone does not do that. So what is the solution? Because I am living. How can I prevent theft but also be fair with shippers? My mistake of when the product is damaged due to transportation conditions, and in a lot of instances, you're not even allowed to do this COVID thing. You're not even been allowed on the dock.
Right.
I have got that exact case right now for a client who picked up a 5-stop in California, headed back to one of these food houses. He had his reefer on. The reefer showed he maintained temperature all the way across the country. He wasn't allowed on the dock to watch him pick the fresh fruit and vegetables. When he got to the consignee, they were all received, subject to count, with no evidence of any distress. 4 days later, the consignee calls and says, there was frost on the pumpkins, we're destroying the whole load. Wasn't pumpkins, I just made that up.
Right.
No adjustment, no proof of reefer damage, no salvage, no mitigation, and the produce broker says, looky, looky what you signed. You agreed to indemnify me. You agreed that you would make a count. All of this stuff, you gave up all of your rights. We're going to sue you in our hometown. And it's a $20,000 loss. And if anybody wants to guess what the insurance company said about that, I don't even have to tell you the name of the insurance company. They looked at it, denied the claim, and said they couldn't prove reefer breakdown. We're not covering you, and we're not defending you. Now, folks, there's right and there's wrong, but that is wrong. But you know as well as I do. Well, he certainly, let's put it this way, the driver said he didn't see any frost on anything when he unloaded, but the delivery receipt said received subject to inspection. Well, what does that tell you? You aren't there to watch it, and they're going to tell you 4 days later it froze? Maybe it froze in their warehouse. I don't know. You know how those dock pickups in California work out. You don't know whether or not they tried to quick freeze the produce to get it in temperature around. You know, poor driver doesn't have a shot. But it's kind of hard to believe that if you got it on constant run and your ambient temperature in your reefer shows you didn't freeze it, you didn't freeze it. So all I'm saying is those kinds of cases happen, increasingly happen, and what I think happens is I'm seeing that brokers are all getting away from the TIA contract and coming up with this, you waive inspection, you waive salvage, you indemnify the broker, you warrant the condition at origin, and, you know, the consignee, for whatever reason, can reject it, and if it's rejected, you bought it. Now, you know, if you sign that kind of stuff, you know, unless we get some legislation or shame people, what do we do about it? The time I get a hold of it, you know, I just have to say, man, you signed one lousy contract.
Now, tell me something. In the U.S., is there any such thing as independent legal advice or something to protect, like, the small carrier that's signing this? He has had no legal coaching on what he's signing. He's just blindly signing a piece of paper because he's stuck in California and needs to load home or in Arizona.
Well they're going to insist on it.
Well, yeah.
It doesn't matter. This is when you put it through MRIS or MyPacket,
right,
or whoever, they're just a vetting service. And they've got this wicked contract, and if there's a load out there, they just tell the guy, well, you go on, here's the passcode, you go on the website, you fill out your bona fides, and you sign our contract. And now you're dealing with some third party, and he says, man, you can't change a word of that. They'll just go find somebody else to haul that load. But once you sign one of those Cincinnati contracts, they're going to give you all the freight you can haul. It's not just for one truck. It's evergreen, and now you know that those big pregnant I got yous are lying in the contract until you got some consignee who's got a case. Now, you know, what happens is the big boys, they just realize that these shippers are demanding, and they build into their rate, maybe a 5% shrinkage allowance. They're going to have 5% claims. But they're big enough to cover it. You know, that's just like the house always wins at the roulette wheel. It's played enough. But the little guy, if he takes his life savings and spends five times, he's probably going to go home broke.
Of course. You know, that's the danger of produce hauling. It's very, very difficult. And, you know, we've seen people get into it, and they buy an old reefer, and they pick up a load, and the load spoils because the reefer breaks, and, you know, the insurance company doesn't want to pay it, and that's the end of their company. You know, it doesn't take long. Hank, I want to ask you, before we get out of here tonight, given the potential for a rough ride ahead, with the economy, what do you think about our listeners that are using factors switching to a non-recourse contract, pay the extra, and that way if there's any issues up the road with companies becoming insolvent, they're protected. What do you think of that?
Well, there are people with a couple of the trade associations that I work with. We're trying to preach to them to insist on better collection and credit provisions in their contracts, including on brokerage loads, recourse to the shipper, and liens and things like that, because none of those contracts have any kind of collection rights. And you're always going to finish last. I think Wall Street does a very good job of looking at jeopardy industries, and I think that people need to do so as well. You know, if you've got one guy who's more than 10% of your business, you might want to start tracking him and seeing what his credit reference is, and if you see it either with the factor or on a bill direct that he's getting more than 5 or 10 days past terms, then you need to go and see what somebody will pay you for non-recourse financing. There's always somebody out there that'll do it. Now, the factors that we're talking about, the good ones say they have very little coming back because they've got such good algorithms. They can see the problem happening. But
right.
You know, particularly if you're in retail now, with the COVID and things like that, who would have thought that Neiman Marcus would have gone bankrupt
or hurt?
You know, those dudes were charging, you know, 8-10 times what the sweater was worth, and you know, were the clothier to the rich, and they're gone.
Right.
And you know, you're going to see these bankruptcies. You know, down here the PPP is throwing a whole lot of money at folks, at big folks, to prop them up, and money's cheap. But I think we're getting set for a big wave of bankruptcy.
Yeah,
there are those accounts, but I think a small man in particular needs to realize that night skies finish last. And you need to be very, very careful, particularly if you've got somebody you don't have comfort with and you see that your receivables are slipping. The one reason for that, and I know this isn't going to make any sense to anybody on the line, but if you get paid slow, that means if somebody starts to pay you beyond ordinary credit terms, you can have to give that back to the bankruptcy estate.
Right.
Nice guys don't just finish last. They don't finish at all.
Yep. Very true. Very true. Well, you know what? It looks like we're past our 8 o'clock or our 1 hour, and we've gone into overtime.
We don't blew past the hour, so but we definitely want to thank everybody for tuning in tonight, listening to the show. You could have been anywhere else in the world, but we appreciate you for taking time out and hanging out, giving us a little bit of your time to come and hang out with us. Really quickly, to get more information or to check out Hank Seaton, you can always find, go over to his website, transportationlaw.net. That is www.transportationlaw.net. I strongly advise, recommend, go over there, order the book, Rules of the Road. If you definitely need to have that in your library. Hank never asked me to do that, but I just think that's kind of like a Bible, and you need to keep that at your hand at all times, so that when we talk about these contracts, when you're doing with the spot market, you can kind of have an idea of what it is, things that's going to stick out, that's going to prick your consciousness to make you think, hey, wait a minute, maybe I shouldn't get involved with this deal right here because I remember reading this in the book, or I remember having this, and you know, you can dog ear that thing, put some post-it tapes on there, quick references, but it definitely can help keep you out of some trouble. But you don't know what you don't know, so you need a reference. You need some type of a guide so that you can be aware of what it is that you need to be aware of. And that is one resource that will definitely, you need to keep that in your war chest. And with that being said, tell people how that's still listening, how they can get in contact with you, and we're going to get up out of here.
Okay. You can call me at 1-800-388-4352. My extension is 203, or you can email me, Chuck, C-H-U-C-K, at traffix.com, or you can send me a private message on Instagram, Chuck Snow CEO. And I appreciate everybody calling tonight.
I'm sorry?
Appreciate everybody calling and listening tonight.
Oh, okay, yes, yeah. So, and if you got any questions, anything like that, any show suggestions, ladies and gentlemen, shoot us to us over on the Racing Lanes Facebook page or check us out on Instagram. One of the two, drop us a message over there. We love to interact with you guys. You know, give us some feedback on some different things that you want, that you would like for us to maybe try to cover or to bring some information on, share some information on, and we'll do our best to get that, to take you up on that. So with that said, I want to tell everybody out there, stay safe, stay healthy. God bless you. Good night. Keep it in between the mustard and the mayonnaise until next week. Be safe, everybody.
Catch you on the flip-flop.
Good night, guys.
God bless.